Okay, so from the racks, we're going to finish off our coverage of the new 52 from DC Comics, the first batch, the number ones. It's week 4 or 5, depending on how you look at it, but it's our conclusion to that coverage, and wow, what a slog it has been. A huge undertaking, and a lot of fun, I thought. So we might do it again if Marvel copies DC at some point, because they probably will. And here we go. Starting with Luke on All-Star Western.
Alrighty then, All-Star Western is written by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti, and is illustrated by Maritat. For those who don't know, All-Star Western stars perennial DC Cowboy Western star Jonah Hex, the disfigured Clint Eastwood, as I like to think of him. And basically, this, whilst not being a continuation, per se, of the old Jonah Hex series, it's pretty good. This starts off with Jonah Hex visiting Gotham in the 1880s, in which he gets embroiled into a Jack the Ripper-like case involving murdered prostitutes. However, he teams up with Amadeus Arkham, ancestor of the current Jeremiah Arkham, and the two of them endeavor to infiltrate Gotham society and solve the mystery of who's killing all these women. I like it. I think I've always liked Jonah Hex. Not a big fan of Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti in the past. However, I think that they do a very good job of capturing both the atmosphere of the time, plus Jonah Hex's character, and they play Arkham's more civilized manner off Jonah Hex's more frontiersman like qualities to great effect. They create a nice little relationship here. Maritat's artwork is excellent. A big fan of him on the Spirit. This is a pretty cool book. I give it 3 looks.
Cool. I agree. Actually, I found the story very interesting. I love the clash of personalities, the sort of Sherlock Holmes-y sort of thing with the personalities. It's a cool premise. I love the Wild West Gotham. Mm. It's pretty good. The art was excellent, as you said. So I really enjoy it. I think that's actually the most enjoyable issue from this batch. I really liked it. Although, why a dollar more than all the other issues? What's up with that?
More pages.
Oh, it's just not good enough.
Higher page count.
There is apparently there is the Jonah Hex stories are going to go back to regular size stories, and there will be backups in subsequent issues featuring other creative teams and other Western characters as well. So it'll still retain that the $3.99 price tag, but you'll get extra content with it.
Okay. My favourite thing actually was the little tie-in to Arkham Asylum with Arkham talking to his mother, and basically the same dialogue from Arkham Asylum story, which I'm a huge fan of, and it was awesome. I had a big smile on my face. So yeah, I really liked it. I gave it 4 looks.
One of the things that I think really stood out for me in this issue, and many respects it's reminiscent of Conan and Robert E. Howard's approach to Conan, is that they've gone and taken Jonah Hex, a supposedly uncivilized character, you know, he's the frontiersman, he's the bounty hunter, the outlaw, and they've placed him in so-called civilized society, but the civilized society he's in isn't actually very civilized at all. And I think that's a great approach to the character. It's a very different take on the Jonah Hex stories of the past. And it's certainly better than sending him into the far-flung future like they did in the early 80s. But I actually think that's a very interesting and very different take on the character. And
it's much better than the film itself.
And much better than the film itself. Yeah, less said about the film, the better. Yeah, so I think this was an excellent read. It's very densely written, so I felt, even with the higher price tag, I still felt like I was getting my money's worth, because not only was it more densely written, but it gave me a very good insight into not just Jonah Hex, but into the character of Arkham as well. Hmm. So I felt like I was still getting a lot of story for my money and a lot of character for my money. Hmm. And I give this 4 looks.
I have to agree with pretty much everything that's been said here. This is my first time being exposed to the Jonah Hex character. I like the sepia tones of the artwork. I also like the Holmes sort of Watson kind of play on each other's characters there. I found it interesting that when he first gets into town, he shoots some people and there's no consequences, and then he's asked to investigate some murders, but I chalk that up to being a sign of the times there. but this is also my favourite of the bunch. But the one thing that frustrated me is I didn't get to find out about the scar and the eye. He gets asked about it, but there's no, you don't get told. That's why they're saving that for future issues for those of us who don't already know about the cover. I give it 3.5 looks.
It's sort of been one of the things about John Hex's character is how did he get scarred. From memory, it gets covered in some of the very earlier appearances of the character in the 70s.
But being a reboot, they'll probably cover it again.
But they'll keep it as a mystery for as long as possible. One of the nice things about Jonah Hex. Jonah Hex isn't a character where you want to know everything about him up front. Mm. You actually don't want to know very much about him. That's what makes him work.
He's a man with no name, with a name.
Exactly, like I said, Clint Eastwood with a scar.
Part of this was to find a book that Crystal really liked, and we've actually found one.
Don't get too excited. It goes downhill from there on.
No, but that's good, though. I mean, the fact that... I mean, we've read 52 comics, and you've actually found one that you liked.
There's
been a couple.
Yeah, but this is the first one, I think, where you've gone...
This is the first one where you've been sort of really praising it, and that's good. Hmm. And that's impressive.
So, moving on to Richo with Aquaman.
Aquaman is written by Geoff Johns and drawn by Ivan Rice. They've actually been working together on quite a few projects in the past. They're sort of one of the A-list creative teams that DC has and did a very memorable run on Green Lantern. And really, I think they were what was needed for a relaunch of Aquaman because he's never really been a hugely successful character in solo books. This was a fairly entertaining read, beautiful artwork. There's really lovely contrasting between the undersea scenes involving this new race of monsters, I suppose, that I'm assuming will be the bad guys. So a very nice contrast between that and the above the ocean moments. Probably my only real problem with this issue is that it really is just one big in-joke. And look, they're really drawing on all of the jokes and things that are told about Aquaman as a character and trying to show you why he's far more effective than those jokes would suggest. And look, it's a good approach in that, you know, it does show you that Aquaman is an effective character, but I think there's just far too much of it in the issue. It's a little bit too metatextual in that respect. And if you don't get the joke, then you're probably reading the issue wondering why it is that so many people are picking on the main character. Yeah, but having said that, overall, I was entertained. I thought it was a solid issue. I really do hope, though, that in subsequent issues, they'll get past that joke and actually move into really telling a stronger story. But I did get a good sense of who Aquaman is as a character. So I'm going to give this one 3 looks.
I'm totally with you on the in-joke nature of it. I just could not get my head around it. Being a nerd and a comic reader, but obviously I got it. But I just think it was just too heavy-handed. I actually think it was to play off on the fact that in Flashpoint, he was a complete badass. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, Aquaman just took, whole nations to town and showed just how powerful he could be. He
fought Wonder Woman to a standstill.
Yeah, and now they've flipped it on its head, and it's like, okay, well, let's go back to the 80s Justice League cartoon type thing where everybody just picked on Aquaman all the time, and it's like fashionable to pick on Aquaman, but I just think it just doesn't work for a first issue of his own individual title. It just doesn't make any sense.
I think the whole point, though, is to address the whole, okay, this Aquaman has been treated as a joke in the past, and this one we're going to say, no, he's not a joke, he's actually quite a powerful character.
Yeah.
And if you're going to pick on him, then you've really got to be careful.
But if you've been, I'm assuming this is set in present day DC reboot. So if he's been around for a couple of years, it's once again, this continuity thing's got me. I mean, what has he done in the time since the reboot to show that people would think he's a joke?
Well, he's clearly been around long enough for these jokes to have begun.
That's right. So how are these jokes even begun? He's clearly powerful.
I think
I don't get it.
I think the first scene where he stops the armed car robbery,
yeah,
I think it works relatively well there because it shows how well he operates on land. But then and sort of one of those jokes would have been fine.
Yeah.
So the police and their reaction to it, the robbers and their reaction, I thought all of that worked fine. But then he goes to the diner
to eat.
And they then follow through with that exact same line of thinking, and I thought it was just a little bit of overkill.
Yeah.
I mean, I got the point from that first scene.
Yeah.
So I think they could have just you know, then started to progress the story more after that first sequence.
But that being said, the bit where they're all horrified that he's going to eat some fish, I thought was actually kind of funny.
Mm.
But it's just too much, in my opinion. So
it's still well executed. I just think that they could have taken a different approach to the
So character. I actually don't even think it's even that well executed. I mean, I'm not too sure exactly what the tone of this book is. I mean, the shark mutant creature things from the deep, whatever they are, piranhas or whatever, the piranha men, which is cool, piranha men. they're awesome, and they're deadly serious. And then you've got all the humorous stuff in the middle of it. I mean, is it meant to be a drama? It's not dramatic enough to be a drama. It's not funny enough to be a comedy. What exactly is it?
I think it's actually probably just a combination of all of those things. You've got the sort of more horror element with the villains. You've got, obviously, the humor element with, you know, this running gag about Aquaman. But then you've got a very nice character moment between Aquaman and Mera.
Yeah.
That establishes their relationship very nicely, and that's more of a drama scene. So I think he's probably just going for a balance. I just don't think he's quite achieved that balance in the first issue.
Anyway, I totally agree with you with the art. The art is excellent. I've always been a fan. So all up, I gave it 2.5 licks.
I like this issue. I take on board what everyone has said. It's probably more of a zero issue than an issue one because it does actually it tries to introduce you to the character and give you where the character is at without doing anything with the story, so probably calling this issue one is probably a mistake. Having said that, I do appreciate the stuff that he does with the character, trying to underline who he is, the jokes that have been made about him in the past, and giving the audience a good reason as to why they should care about him. I like the diner scene, but as I said, probably would have worked better if this was like an epilogue or a prologue to a story rather than the start of the story itself. The artwork is, for me, crisp to the point where it was almost shiny. Like, because I actually feel light radiating off the page. And I'm a big fan of Ivan Reiss. And I think he's gone above and beyond. Like, he's almost at a Perez type level with his artwork in terms of detail and page layout and things like that. All in all, a good book. I give it 3.5 looks.
Well, I didn't get the in jokes, obviously. No one's going to be surprised that I've said that. I found it cheesy and a bit contrived in the way it explained the character. I did think Aquaman in the seafood restaurant was kind of funny. But I came away thinking, was I supposed to take this comic seriously? I wasn't sure which way you were supposed to read it. And I found it interesting that it works in modernisms such as YouTube and whatnot, but it still reads like an old-time comic. The dialogue still seems old. I give it 2 weeks.
Cool. Okay, next up we have myself with Blackhawks. Okay, Blackhawks, written by Mike Costa, with layouts by Graham Nolan, and finishing by Ken Lashley. Why does no one ever mention the colorists? The colorist was Guy Major. I mean, how's that for a name? Awesome. Okay, so I went into Blackhawks a bit unwillingly, as I was never a fan of the original incarnation. But I had a bit of fun. Starting in the middle of the action was cool, especially Kunauchi, I don't know, whatever, the cute pink-haired chick, shooting the water to disrupt the surface tension. I don't know if that's scientifically accurate, but it was cool, and why does no one ever do that? But it was a little hard to follow at times, especially with the weak art. Sorry, guys, but yeah, the artwork wasn't the best. The Blackhawks logo, though, that looks awesome. Very Thundercats-y. I liked it. The tough girl refusing medical attention bit was cliched, but I do like the retro aspect of gaining superpowers from being doused with toxic waste. How cool is that? Overall, this is a solid G.I. Joe-style action comic, but I won't be continuing with it. I gave it 2.5 looks.
Yeah, I'm just not really a fan of the sort of G.I. Joe-style comics. You know, the sort of crack elite military team, you know, each from different countries, each with their own, you know, country-based personality thing. It's not really the kind of comics that appeal to me. Having said that, I actually don't think that this was all that great an approach to that type of book anyway. I didn't really get a sense too much of the characters, why I should care about them, who they are, why they're part of this crack elite Blackhawks team. I didn't even really get a feel for what the Blackhawks team is about. So I don't think it really, even as a sort of paramilitary crack team book, it just didn't really do it for me. You know, the artwork was okay. The storytelling was okay. I would have liked a lot more character work, and probably even a little bit more plot to sort of really establish what the book's about, what the team's about, and why I should continue reading. And unfortunately, they didn't do that. I'll give it 1.5 Lukes, but I won't be returning for the second issue.
I pretty much agree with what's been said. There is nothing in this issue that I have not read in other comics.
Yeah, in far superior G.I. Joe comics.
John Ostrander's
Larry Hama.
John Ostrander's run on Suicide Squad sort of comes to mind.
Oh, it destroys this comic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a different beast, though, Luke. That's apples and oranges.
Well, not really. It's still a crack team assembled. It's just a crack team of far more interesting characters assembled with a far more interesting mission statement. But John Ostrander could have produced a fantastic Black Hawks book, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
There's nothing in this that you cannot find in other comics, books, other media, and done far more effectively, I think. I don't even know why it's called Black Hawks, because Black Hawk himself, as a character, does nothing.
Because he's the main guy, so he gets to name the team. It's the
Kanoichi, in spite of the fact that she goes through the cliched, I don't want medical attention because I'm tough.
Yeah, because I'm a woman and I have to be tough in front of all these men.
Even though she's meant to be a supporting character, actually gets most of the action.
Yeah.
So the storytelling, from the writing perspective, is actually askew, because the perspective is not where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
The artwork, Graham Nolan, I don't mind. Graham Nolan, Kendall Ashley is probably not the best combination. Yeah. Graham Nolan by himself should be able to do a issue without too much hassle. A solid artist, if not great, but yeah, the artwork in this is pretty bad. Like everyone in the group, I will not be returning for issue 2. I give this one a look.
You just reminded me, actually, is, you know how I mentioned that I like the logo.
Mm.
One of the plot points of the story is that someone's taken a photo of the logo.
Yeah.
It's like, if you don't want your logo seen by the general populace, why have a logo?
Why have it emblazoned on your uniforms when you go into battle?
Anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up. I just thought it was kind of silly.
When I looked at the cover of this one, I knew it wasn't going to appeal to me, and I was right. The story starts off in mid-mission, so I found it very hard to tell what was going on. I didn't understand the objective of the mission that they were on, and I got the feeling that you should already know who all the characters are. I agree about the hero refusing medical treatment, that is cliched, but I also found it irresponsible, because if you are a member of a crack military team and you're in need of medical attention and don't get it, you're not going to be any good to anyone if your arm suddenly falls off or something.
Mid-mission, your arm just falls off. It's just a flesh wound.
Yeah, the I ain't got time to bleed moments in these books and films do kind of come across as a bit ludicrous.
If I hadn't had a huge amount of time on my hands when I was reading these, I wouldn't have bothered to finish one. But given that I did finish reading it, I feel that they should have revealed what Nikki was going to turn into before the comic ended. Mm. And the cell where she says no, please no, she doesn't look worried to me at all. She looks like she's talking into a risk communicator and is about to leap into action. So I have to agree with the artwork there as well. I think this fails as a first issue. And I give it 0.5 Lukes.
Just wondering. Because, yeah, that was... I just want to bring up one interesting point you made there, which was that we should know who the characters are. You felt that we should know who the characters are going into this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I completely agree. Yet none of these characters... Black Hawk as a name is familiar, but none of these characters have actually appeared before. And so they're trying to get us...
all brand new.
They're trying to get us into this book with characters we've not known about yet. We've apparently got to have some form of history with them to know who they are.
So I thought they were the actual original Black Hawk team.
I've
only ever read one Black Hawk comic before this. And essentially it's just... So her name's... So I've been struggling with Kanuchi or Kanachi or whatever her name is.
Kanoichi, I think.
But her name's just Nikki. Yeah. I should have just said Nikki and just be that one.
Well, the full name of one of this is Kanoichi.
Whatever. It's boring.
Yes.
Okay, so we're devastated Blackhawks. Let's move on to Luke with Batman the Dark Knight.
And it doesn't get much better. This is co-plotted by David Finch, and Paul Jenkins, and I use the term plotting very loosely. It's written, scripted by Paul Jenkins, and well, it says it's art by David Finch, but whilst you know, David Finch has put pen to paper, I will not call this artwork. This is the worst book, the worst bat book of the relaunch. In terms of the plot and the story, it does nothing that you cannot get from Batman. It just treads, and to a certain, to a lesser extent, even Detective Comics.
Mm.
It just goes for the same thing, you know. Batman is, you know, the obsessed Dark Knight of Gotham. Bruce Wayne has a plan for to revitalize Gotham City.
Fight some There's
been
a,
in the second Batman comic in a month, there has been yet another break-in attempt at Arkham by the inmates. Now, if they're meant to be related, fine. But there's no correlation between this and Batman as to whether that's the case. There is yet another love interest. So in the past month, we've been introduced to three potential love interests.
Yeah.
And this one, it's...
Well, he is Batman.
True, but I think there needed to be some kind of editorial continuity worked out between the
Bat
books.
Just put Nicky Bailey
there
and be done with it.
Jaina Hudson is the one in this one.
Yeah.
Charlotte Rivers has been introduced to Detective. Catwoman, we've, you know, talked about that in the past.
Is Catwoman a love interest, though, or just like a sex slave?
Okay,
that's Starfire.
Yeah, no. Batman is Catwoman's sex slave, according to Catwoman number one.
Yeah, this is awful. David Finch should not be allowed to put pencil to board, let alone put his fingers near a typewriter or a word processor. Paul Jenkins does his best to sort of mitigate the damage, but even he can't, you know, stop this from being a complete train wreck.
Tell us what you really think, please.
This is poorly plotted. Even the page layouts and the cross-cutting between one panel to the next is inconsequential. One being when Batman lands on a rooftop trying to get to a function as Bruce Wayne. You see him land on the roof, and the next panel, you see Bruce Wayne almost fully dressed. Now, okay, running to the function, takes out his grappling gun, fires it, and then flying foxes from one building to the other. Bruce Wayne needs to use Batman's grappling gun to get to his own function. He can't just hire the Wayne helicopter and do what he does in Dark Knight and just land right at the last minute. And second of all, the panel going from Batman landing on the roof to him getting changed to Bruce Wayne, I'm sitting there going, hang on, there is a time jump here that makes no sense. Okay, yes, I hate decompressed storytelling, but please, a panel telling me that he is getting changed somewhere out of sight.
Even like a Superman style ripping the
hair. They show him running and him dressing at the same time.
Yeah.
But even so, the time jump is still too... There is too much time that has elapsed between two.
If that had been Catwoman, there would have been a boob hanging out.
Exactly.
Yeah. My biggest problem with that scene is, why did he need to land on the roof next door and fire across? I mean, why not just land on the roof?
Yeah.
Change on the roof and go downstairs.
And the action is terrible. The characterization is... I'm not even going to say adequate. This is... Yeah, the characterization is terrible. And the last page revelation makes no sense. As in, okay, yes, it's going to be explained in the upcoming issues, but I sat there going, really? Are you kidding me?
The very last line makes
no sense. This is zero Luke's from me.
Wow. I'm with you, young Luke. I'm sick to death of the praise lavished on David Finch. He's a poor man's Jim Lee with no sense of style of his own or any storytelling technique.
Mm-hmm.
And now he can add, I can't write to his CV. I mean, it's just, he's hopeless. The story is nothing. There's no sense of urgency. There's no sense of excitement. It's boring. Half of it makes no sense whatsoever. Mm. I give it 0.5 Luke's.
My biggest problem, and it was something that Luke has actually sort of hit on in his review, my biggest problem with this is that the week before, we get the exact same story in Batman, and the Batman story is perfectly executed, in my opinion. It is. That first issue was the perfect first issue for introducing all the elements you needed to know about Batman, about Bruce Wayne, about his relationships with everybody. This is like, what if that exact same issue was done by people who have no talent?
Yeah.
What if they just... We'll tell the exact same story, but we'll do it badly.
Hmm.
So there's a pointless speech by Bruce Wayne that doesn't tell me anything about his plan. A couple of meaningless scenes involving Batman in some action sequences. I don't get a feel for his relationship with anybody else in the book except for the third love interest that he's hitting on. It's really just, like I said, it's just Batman, but done very, very, very badly.
It's like fan fiction Batman. Yeah. And you're right, the last bit, I guess we can give it away, I suppose.
Can I actually read what the line is?
Yeah.
He's gone in to face the inmates who have escaped from Arkham Asylum, trying to find Two-Face. He finds Two-Face. Two-Face steps out on the last page, hulked up. So he's been obviously been through some kind of experiment where...
Or venomized or something.
Yeah, venomized, something like where he's been, you know, where he's amped up.
And I don't mean Venom the symbiote, I mean Venom the drug.
Yeah, the drug that Bane uses, and that's what he looks like here. He looks like Bane with Two-Face's face. The line is this, you know, the line before it is, Two-Face, show yourself. And that is one of the weakest pieces of Batman writing I've ever seen. Batman actually declaring who he is before he fights the enemy. Two-Face appears and he says this, Two-Face no longer, Batty Boy. You can call me One-Face now.
What?
What does that even mean?
Exactly right.
It doesn't mean anything, pointless. Especially considering the fact that he actually is still Two-Face.
Exactly right.
It's not like he's got a mask cover it or something like that. It's just, it is pathetic.
There's one other problem I have with this book. And it's actually a problem that I find with a lot of characters who have multiple titles. I'm a very big fan of, if you're a character or it's super team and you have multiple titles, each title should have a reason for existing. It should be different from the others. There should be, I always liked, very recently, when Grant Morrison was doing Batman, and Paul Dini was doing Detective, Batman was the action book where he was the international jet setter, you know. Detective Comics was the detective book where you got to see Batman solving crimes. And I liked that because it's like, here are two different approaches to the character. Mm. There's a really good reason for both of the books existing. Unfortunately, with Dark Knight, the only reason the book exists is because it's a vanity project for David Finch. And I hate that. I wanted a reason why this book should exist and what makes it stand out from Batman and from Detective. And I just didn't get that at all.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this from a new point of view, a new person's point of view, there's too many different Batman ones, and they're too confusing. Why are there so many different Batman ones?
Yeah. Each book needs to be able to stand on its own and to stand out from the other books and say, here's why this book should be published. And I didn't get that from Dark Knight at all. I'm going to give this 0 Lukes.
My first impression was Jaina's dress is ridiculous. Absolutely.
What's wrong with the dress?
She looks like she's going to a nightclub, not to a charity function.
None
of you guys are girls, so you don't know what wearing women's clothes are like, or do you?
Or do we? Except look at Luke's face.
That just looks like the most uncomfortable. Not to mention, I mean, it's ridiculously sexy, but it just looks...
What's wrong with sexy?
Nothing wrong with sexy, but it also looks incredibly uncomfortable.
No, I can't comment on that.
She couldn't sit down without her panties showing. She'd be constantly doing a Picard maneuver in that thing. It's ridiculous.
I just think, you know, for a big, you know, high stakes fundraiser thing like what they're doing here, you wouldn't be dressing like you're hitting the Metro nightclub, you know, to get a bit of action.
She looks like she should be wearing roller skates.
Get a bit of action.
Yeah, exactly. She should be wearing something a little bit classier, something that's a little bit more formal for the occasion.
Yeah,
it's just like David Finch is going, oh yeah, I'm going to draw a real sexy like, and it actually comes across as kind of stupid instead.
And I thought later on when he goes to the asylum, why is that bunny girl there? The flimsy excuse that she's some kind of distraction doesn't fly with me is just is a gratuitous bunny butt shot.
Absolutely.
Bunny butt shot. Which is actually one of Mad Hatter's minions.
Yeah,
but I don't know that, do I? So it's just there's a sexy woman there for no reason.
And really, why does she have to be like turning around, leaning forward, thrusting her butt out at Batman? In effectively a really... riding up her butt.
But you mentioned that. So she's in her bunny costume, right? One of the things I just don't get about Batman comics is, why is it that the inmates of Arkham get to keep their costumes on?
Well, normally they don't.
More times than not, they are actually in their costumes instead of in, like, you know, orange jumpsuits. I just don't understand why they're allowed to keep their paraphernalia.
Oh, well, they're not. Joker's quite often in Arkham shown in a straight jacket.
Yeah, so Joker would be in a straight jacket or something, and that makes sense to me.
But in the current batch of Batman comics, in the two times we've seen the Arkham inmates, they've had their costumes on. Why?
I think that's, you know, audience recognition more than anything else.
It doesn't make any sense. If you can't recognise Mad Hatter,
which is that
in a jumpsuit, but with just his spectacles, something's wrong.
Which is that because the animated show did it quite well.
Yeah.
You know, the animated show actually constantly showed them in their own jumpsuits, and you still knew who the characters were.
I mean, obviously it's okay with Joker because he looks like that anyway. And Croc, obviously, I mean, he just looks like that.
Mm.
I mean, but I mean, I'd be able to recognise Zaz in a jumpsuit. I mean,
Zaz, Harley, even Jonathan Crane is recognisable.
Yeah. I give it 1.5 Lukes, only because as a first issue, I found it readable enough. I wasn't confused by anything except for maybe the bunny girl. I have to agree with everyone about the one-face thing. It just didn't mean anything to me. I knew who Two-Face was from the movie, but the picture of him, he still has the two faces, so call me one-face now doesn't mean anything.
Mm. And it's a stupid name.
Yep.
Everyone's got one face. Why would we call you one face?
Okay, well, we've destroyed Dark Knight. So a bit of 1.5, a bit of praise.
Well,
not much.
I say only because it was followable.
Yeah, you're right. It's basically just a carbon copy of Batman. So, I mean, it's followable, but that doesn't mean it's good. Okay, well, we've trashed Dark Knight. So let's move on to Richo with The Fury of Firestorm.
The Fury of Firestorm is co-plotted by Ethan Van Sciver and Gail Simone. It's scripted by Gail Simone, and it is penciled by Yildare Sinar. And I hope I've gotten that name right. I'm just going to run with it.
Into the cool name list.
Absolutely. This is, the full title of the book is The Fury of Firestorm, The Nuclear Men. And this is a complete reboot, starting from scratch, introducing the characters right from the outset. Neither of Ronnie Raymond or Jason Rush, the former Firestorms, neither of them have actually been Firestorm in continuity to date. However, they are now both Firestorm, and in fact can apparently form into a gestalt being called Fury. That seems to be the suggestion of the book. Look, this was not a great first issue. There's a couple of, I think, cliches that it runs with. The opening with the terrorist attack was one of them. Neither of the two lead characters really come across as likable or really all that interesting just yet. I didn't really feel any great connection to either of them. There are a couple of very interesting elements here. There's something called the Firestorm Protocols, which is set up as a mystery, and it seems to suggest that there are firestorms all over the globe. There's a very interesting page where you get to see what looks like perhaps a Chinese or a Japanese firestorm. And a few others as well. And
Firehawk.
And Firehawk is in there as well, which is actually kind of interesting because it means, therefore, that Firehawk now predates Firestorm in this new rebooted version of the characters. Look, there's enough of a mystery and an interest in the nature of Firestorm to sort of hold me through this issue, but I just didn't feel the characters very much. I really would have liked something a little bit more interesting from them for why I should be interested in them becoming Firestorm. But having said that, look, it was a solid enough first issue, enough that I would, you know, be interested in checking out a few more issues at least, just to see what the deal is with this Firestorm Protocols. But I'm hoping that we'll get a lot more reason to care for the characters as the series progresses. I'm going to give this 2.5 Lukes.
Cool. I agree. I thought the art was good. Wasn't, you know, Ivan Reis level of awesome, but, you know, still good. I'm really interested in the Firestorm Protocols. I think they all look mad. It's like a Firestorm Incorporated type deal.
Well, I think the thing
it's
is...
It's always good to see Firehawk.
Yeah. I think the great thing is the Firestorm design, the original Firestorm design, is actually one of my favourites in comics.
Classic.
And the variations that they've created on that for these Firestorm Protocols, they've kept the key elements and sort of updated them and things, and they all look awesome.
Yeah, they all look awesome. Yeah. Very, very cool. A couple of things I sort of noticed was that they don't seem... Both Ronnie and Jason don't seem all that shocked that they're now superpowered, especially Jason.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, well, you know, activate Firestorm.
Yeah.
And which is a cool sequence, but then he's kind of like, well, we've got powers now, and it's like let's have a fight. It's all seemed kind of. I mean, I'd be a bit, hey, what's going on here?
There's no sort of shock and. Or amazement that become.
There was no amazement. That's what I wanted. Yeah. And I mean, if I became Firestorm, I'd be amazed, and then I'd go on the talk show circuit. But it's very cool. But and the other thing, I just didn't like the Fury. I mean, you're totally right. I've actually read the interview with the creators, and it is they do actually join together to form Fury, who's basically Firestorm Hulk, and they don't have as much control over him. He's the big gun sort of stuff. I actually thought he was a bit of a lame attempt to get the Black Lantern Firestorm back into it, because he talks like the Black Lantern Firestorm, which everybody loved. I loved the Black Lantern Firestorm. It was awesome. So he talks like him, but he doesn't look like him. He now basically just looks like the Hulk Firestorm mode. So I thought that was pretty lame. It's kind of weak. I didn't really get the point to it. And obviously, you would only want to bring him out in dire circumstances. But if they want him to be popular, which they clearly do, they're going to have to pull him out fairly often. And why would they need to? I mean, Firestorm can change the molecular structure of things.
Yeah.
You've got two of them and a whole protocols of them. You just don't need this Firestorm guy, this Fury guy, who's basically just going to beat things up. So it's just, I just thought it was kind of pointless. But I mean, so overall, I mean, it wasn't terrible. I didn't hate it, so I gave it 2 licks.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with what's been said. Conceptually, I think this book is flawed as Dave just pointed out. The other thing is that I think it's a mistake to actually introduce the Fury, given that the Firestorms themselves haven't been clearly delineated either as characters or as what they can do. Fury should have been the appearance of the Fury should have been a build up to issue 6, and then the combination of the two in issue 6. Should have been Fury, and that should have been like the big wow moment for the entire story.
Yeah, create a situation so extreme that they subconsciously merge and create the character so that you understand that it is only there for the most extreme.
And these punks with, these punk assassin guys with guns is not that extreme.
Well, they're so generic and boring.
Doomsday would be that extreme.
Yeah. And I think they spent far too long setting up the fact that Ronnie and Jason don't like each other to the point where the relationship isn't very interesting. It seems to be more of an offshoot of the way that they started off in Brightest Day, where they didn't like each other, and then as Brightest Day progressed, grew to like each other to become friends, and this doesn't seem to be going off the path in that respect.
It's just kind of weak, isn't it? I mean, in Blackest Night and Brightest Day, he has a very clear reason for why he doesn't like him due to the death of his girlfriend. So I mean. Whereas this one, it's like, even they don't seem too conscious of why they're doing what they're doing. It's like, well, why are we fighting? There's like little thought balloons. It's like, why am I having an argument with this guy? And as a reader, I'm saying this, you're right. Why are you having an argument with this guy? What's your business, mate?
It's petty, it's childish, and it's not interesting. So Vance Over and Simone have got a lot of work to do to make the characters themselves interesting and to make their relationship interesting. I've got no problem with two main characters who don't like each other.
Yeah.
That can provide for some good drama and even some good comedy.
Yeah.
I just don't think that appears here. Sinar's artwork is quite nice, but doesn't overcome what is essentially a very, very poorly plotted first issue. I give it 2 looks.
I found this one very boring. In fact, I've put in my notes, I put boring in capital letters with a couple of exclamation marks. The story seemed contrived and cliched. My interest was sort of sparked during the CERN scene, and I'm no scientist by any means of the definition of the word, but I'm pretty sure the Higgs boson particle just doesn't operate that way.
The Higgs boson particle does not work that way and will not turn you into Firestorm. Don't go eating them.
Little things like that tend to put me off this story. So I'm being very harsh in this one. I've given it 0.5 looks because I found it so boring.
Fair enough.
Yep.
It fails as a first issue.
Well, no, it doesn't fail as a first issue because...
Sorry, I just wanted to say.
Because, that's an interesting point. I don't think it does fail as a first issue because it does introduce the characters and, I had no trouble following it. I just found it very boring.
Very nice. Okay, so next up we have Luke with The Flash.
Flash issue 1 is... just check. It is co-plotted and co-written by Francis Manapul and Brian Bucciolato, and with art by Francis Manapul and Brian Bucciolato. Actually, does the colours going on? You know, why don't we mention the colourist?
The only reason I mentioned the colourist before is because he had a cool, cool name.
I just found it interesting that the co-plotter of this also colours the book.
And it
is effectively a reintroduction of the Flash, in that it's set during the Flash's early days, set during the Barry Allen's early days. Barry Allen is the Flash here. Sorry to give that away, guys.
It's right at the start. It's not giving anything away.
People might be looking at the cover going, I wonder who the Flash is this time around.
It's a youngified
Barry Allen, set during his the start of his career as the Flash. And it's basically just an introduction to, you know, who the character is, what he is, forensic psychologist, his relationships, Patty Spigot, with hints that Iris West, will play a much more prominent role in preceding issues. There is a mystery concerning Barry Allen's friend Manuel. I think the artwork in this is sumptuous. I think it's excellent. I'm a big fan of Francis Manapul ever since his Legion superhero days. Loved his earlier run on The Flash with Geoff Johns. And I think he does a fantastic job here. Co-plotting it himself has given him free rein in his artwork to try and push himself even more as an artist in terms of page layout. To really nice effect. Especially the title.
The title splash page.
And there's a really great page later on where you get a bird's eye view of Barry Allen's apartment, which I think is just fantastic.
Yeah, it's this page.
I disagree with that one. I found that very disorientating.
That's a huge wild effect, as you were saying, because I know Crystal hated that bit. That's
I didn't hate it. I just found it disorientating. It felt like I was hovering above, and it didn't flow.
I take the point. I disagree. I like the page, but I do take the point. If you're going from the page beforehand, which is of the Flash standing on top of the building talking to his police friend, it is a bit of a sudden cut going from that bit to the interior of his apartment and looking straight down without much of a precy for it.
It might have been a problem having been seasick the day before.
That could also be it. Comic sickness. There you go.
One of the things that amazed me with the artwork in this book is that the Flash is constantly in motion.
Hmm.
And I think that panel shows that even as Barry Allen in his apartment, you're still following him around the apartment. And I love that aspect of it. I love that this Flash is just constantly on the move and that the artwork reflects that aspect of his character.
If I have any problems with this as an issue, it's a long-time Flash reader coming into it, given that he plays such a prominent role in Flashpoint being the main character, and given that Flashpoint ended with their introduction of this new universe. Found it a bit disjarring with the status quo that they set up in The Flash. Used to, you know, Iris West being his wife, not used to Patty Spivot. It took a while for me to get my head around the whole idea that this was actually taken back beforehand, because there's nothing in the story itself, like no little caption saying 6 years ago, what have you, saying when this is set and what the status quo is. So it took a while to get around that. Apart from that, top notch, full looks.
I agree with everything you said, so keeping it short, except maybe for the sumptuous artwork. I mean, it was excellent artwork, but I probably wouldn't go that far. But yeah, I will give it 3.5 looks. I liked it.
I was actually very pleasantly surprised by this issue. I didn't really know what to expect. I hadn't seen Manapul's work on the previous Flash. I have been a little bit critical of the return of Barry Allen because I actually really like Wally West as the Flash, and I liked the legacy aspect of it. Yeah, so I must admit, I didn't know what to expect from this book, but I was pleasantly surprised. The creative team has done a really good job of introducing me to Barry Allen and establishing him as a character. And he's somebody that I'm interested in and would like to read more about. They set up an interesting sort of murder mystery aspect of it, which I think helps sort of carry the story as well. The Flash seems to be a likable character, which was great. I think probably the most interesting thing is that I'm actually, despite the fact that she only appears in a few panels, I think Iris West is probably the standout character of the book. I mean, she's really quite interesting, and I want to read a lot more about her, but the way they've set her up is quite nice. They've given her a bit of a personality, but they haven't focused too much attention on her, so, and that helped me, because, yeah, I do want to read more about her. I think the artwork is fantastic. One of the things I've been a little bit critical of on some of these DC books is that I don't think the artists have been really pushing themselves and challenging themselves and really trying new techniques and new styles, with obviously a few exceptions. With Animal Man, with Trevor Foreman, with J.H. Williams in Batwoman, you know. There have been exceptions, but I think too many of the artists have just been playing it safe. Manipal hasn't done that here. He's tried to do something really interesting and creative with his artwork. He's done fascinating layouts, but at the same time, they're still easy to follow. Like, they're still telling the story, so he hasn't gone too wild with that. But he's just created really interesting pages that really help propel the story.
People don't want interesting, Dave. People want David Finch. People don't want J.H. Williams there.
I dropped Batman the Dark Knight the day after I read
it. I just don't get it. I don't understand why people would prefer Finch over this awesome artwork.
Artwork is always subjective, but I'm not a fan of Finch's style. And he is playing it safe. I mean, he's doing the third generation Jim Lee, Mark Silvestri approach to comics. I really wish more of the artists had used this first issue thing to really push themselves. And I'm glad that Manipal has done it here on The Flash. And as I said earlier, I love the fact that there is a constant sense of movement, because there you've got the art reflecting the nature of the character. And I think that's fantastic. And so I'm going to give this book 4.5 Lukes.
Nice.
I have to agree with everyone on the artwork. A lot of the time, looking at the comics, they're pretty much all the same to me. Maybe it's just because I'm not a comic person, but I like the watercolory sort of style combined with the cartoony type figures. That was really nice. Just a few points I want to pick on. There is a point where one character just says, for no apparent reason, "I like the tie," and no one responds to that. Why did you say that?
I actually thought that was a bit of a Doctor Who reference, because Doctor Who keeps going on about his bow tie. I thought that I wondered if that was actually a subtle allusion.
Well, if he was wearing a bow tie, it might have been, but he wasn't.
Because Barry Allen, actually, in previous continuity, Barry Allen wore a bow tie constantly. Looked a bit like Matt Smith. Yeah. With a different head.
So it was an in-joke that I didn't get.
With a better head.
It was an in-joke, but not in that Aquaman kind of every scene is an in-joke, just a little subtle nod, I suppose.
And the other point I wanted to pick on is the Flash seems surprised when the bad guy is dead, but I would have thought surely throwing him through a plate glass window at such a height and velocity would have had the potential to kill him. So when he was surprised, I was a bit confused.
I suppose that comes back to that sort of staple of comic books, is that no matter how badly you beat somebody, usually all you do is beat them into unconsciousness without inflicting concussions or anything. So the standard in comics, I suppose, is that, you know, you beat people up and they're okay afterwards.
Yeah, it's like Spidey always holding back, and it's like, let's face it, in reality, he just had to flick you in the face and you'd be dead.
Yeah, so that's probably where that surprise was coming from, but I certainly see the point you're making, yeah.
So, on the whole, it wasn't one I was terribly enthused about. I gave it 2 Lukes.
Cool. Okay, so moving on to myself with Green Lantern New Guardians. Listeners of the podcast will know that I was very excited about this book. I mentioned it in every episode for the last ones. I was really looking forward to it. And here's my review. New Guardians is written by Tony Bernard with pencils by Tyler Kirkham. I'm not going to mention the colorist because I can't pronounce his name. But the colors are good. So good work, whoever you were. As we've said before, this is not a true number one. It follows directly on from a previous Green Lantern story, in this case being Emerald Twilight, but with a strange sort of twist. The art is nice. It's nothing flash, but it's good, serviceable. It's no J.H. Williams, but at least it's not David Finch. I love the Infinity Gauntlet-style story that's going on. The cover even alludes to an Infinity Gauntlet-type deal with different members of the various core members fighting for the rings that are just out of their reach. It's very cool. So basically, the story, it deals with Kyle Rayner as a Lantern. Now, I actually found this a tad confusing. So at first, upon first reading, I had this massive rant about why reintroduce Kyle as a rebooted character, and this makes no sense. And Kyle's in Blackest Night. How does it work? Blah blah blah. And sort of went on like a bit of an idiot. But upon closer inspection and rereading, I can see that it is actually introducing Kyle as the Kyle that we all know and love, as I said, he's actually my favourite Lantern. We have a bit of a flashback at the start. So like I said, the Emerald Twilight thing. And then moving to present day where he's actually a Lantern and he's been in action for a while and people pick on him because he's designed his own suit and all that sort of stuff. So a tad confusing, I thought. Kind of weird, but hey, that's neither here nor there. Now, so like I said, the story involves everybody fighting over these rings. So the rings actually leave certain members of the other core in a term called decommissioning. For some of them, it's pretty bad because one is in the middle of a fight, although he's one of the yellow lands, so he probably deserves it. Another one's a Star Sapphire who's in the middle of deep space, so that's pretty unfortunate for her. And they all then fly to Earth in order to join with their new chosen host, Kyle, which is something that's never been seen before. So multiple rings choosing the one candidate. So Lex Luthor's obviously going to be very upset because he spent quite a substantial amount of time trying to get different rings.
Ah, but did he?
Well, yes, that's true. That's pre-reboot, so it didn't happen now. And, of course, the issue ends with the various lands trying to fight off and reclaim the rings that they claim Kyle has stolen, who, of course, has no idea what's going on. Like I said, at first it was a bit confusing, so I wasn't too impressed because I was too busy, having nerd rage about why did they bother to reboot Kyle? It doesn't make any sense and all that sort of stuff. But then, upon reflection and reading it again, I kind of like it. It works pretty well. So overall, I liked it. It was pretty cool. It probably wasn't as good as my expectations, my unusually high expectations wanted it to be. And probably still not the best of the new Lantern books, in my opinion. I actually preferred Red Lanterns. But overall, it was enjoyable, and I give it 3.5 loops.
I commend the effort that they've put in at the start, or at least the idea of actually devoting a few pages at the start to the origin of the central character of the book.
Hmm.
I actually wish more of the books had perhaps taken that approach. My only problem with it is that Kyle Rayner's origin is actually centered around another story.
Hmm.
And that's the story of Hal Jordan going insane, getting possessed by Parallax, and basically wiping out the Green Lantern Corps. So, unfortunately, whilst I commend their attempt to show the Kyle Rayner origin story and sort of tweak it to suit the purposes that they need to suit for the story they're telling, I don't think they actually succeeded in getting his story across,
hmm.
All that well, all
told. But you can always go back and read. The Green Lantern number ones aren't number ones.
Well, no. Really. Well, this one is a little bit more because it is showing you the origin of Kyle Rayner in those first few pages.
So
it's done better than, say, it's certainly done better than Green Lantern did.
Yeah.
And Green Lantern Corps and Red Lanterns did as far as introducing the character.
Definitely.
I think their execution in doing that could have been a lot better.
Well, confusing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. There was a little bit of confusion there, and I had the same problem you did at first. Was my first reaction was, well, is this a relaunch or, is this just a flashback? But they do set up that it is a flashback and that the main sort of key elements of the story then take place after that. I think you do need to have a full knowledge, though, of the different cores.
Yeah.
And what has actually happened in the lead-up to this story. So, as I said, that's where I think the execution of trying to introduce the character fails a bit.
Yeah.
Because they give you his origin.
It fails as a first issue.
Well, they give you his origin, but they don't give you the context in which that takes place.
Yeah, fair enough.
The artwork is serviceable, but not great. I think Tyler Kirkham actually falls into what I was talking about a little bit earlier.
Mm.
One of those artists that is okay, solid enough, decent enough storytelling, but without really doing anything to make me go, wow, look at this artwork.
Yeah.
But, it was a reasonable issue, all things told, but there was no real excitement to it for me. There was nothing that was really hooking me and going, wow, I've really got to keep reading this book. I'm going to give it 2 Lukes.
Yeah, look, I agree with what has been said. My issue with the retelling of the origin was that it took 7 pages and you could have probably done it about 4 or 5. And, get to the present day, get to the action. The problem with the present day and the action is that nothing happens. Some Lanterns lose their rings, they choose Kyle, that's pretty much the issue. And yeah, I thought this could have been, as Richo pointed out, I thought this could have been a lot more exciting and a lot more interesting. It is nowhere near the level that Red Lanterns is at.
Hmm.
I don't mind Tyler Kirkham's artwork, but there are better Green Lantern artists. Fernando Pastorin on Green Lantern Corps comes to mind. I give this 2 looks.
I have to agree with everything that's been said so far. I mean, I thought it started off well. The character was introduced reasonably well. The montage of the various lanterns being decommissioned was confusing and assumes that you already know about the lantern universe.
Exactly right.
Until I heard you guys talking, wasn't even completely sure they were lanterns. And I completely missed the present day bit. So when it jumps to the scene with the construction guys in Times Square, already knowing all about the Green Lanterns, I was a bit confused because of the beginning where Kyle didn't know about the Green Lanterns.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, yeah. So he's like, what the hell are Green Lanterns?
So
yeah,
it fails as a first issue in that I didn't know who any of the lanterns were. I don't know what the rings are, why they're flying off people's fingers and choosing Kyle. I gave it 1.5 looks.
Fair enough. See, it's actually, because I'm a huge Blackest Night fan and a fan of all the different core and all sort of stuff, I didn't find that sequence confusing, but I agree that it totally fails in terms of introducing the core and stuff like
but
that.
But it's also not such a substandard way, too. It's like, okay, 2 pages for the Red Lantern, 2 pages for the Indigo Lantern, 2 pages for the Blue Lantern. It's kind of like, great, okay, can we have something, you know, that's progressing the story instead of getting every single lantern ring?
I didn't mind that. I actually thought that was all right.
It took too long. I wanted, you know, stuff to happen, and nothing happened.
I don't know.
I'm a little confused overall by DC's approach to this relaunch in relation to the Green Lantern franchise.
Yeah, we've said it before. It's kind of weird.
It's like they've just decided, Green Lantern's already a successful franchise, so we'll just continue it on, and we'll just assume everybody knows what's going on. I think the problem there is that for a relaunch that's meant to be attracting new readers and lapsed readers, you know, I think they could have done a much better job of, you know, really going, here's what the Green Lantern Corps and all the other corps about. Here's the full setup for how this part of the DC Universe works, and now here's the stories to go with it. And I really think they should have done it in Green Lantern. It's meant to be the flagship book.
Yep.
I think they should have established that. That should have been the first one released. And then the subsequent books could have then followed on from that. So if you read Green Lantern and went, wow, this is interesting, I'm fascinated by this setup with all these lantern corps and everything, oh look, here's all these other books featuring different members of the different corps. Now that I know what that's about, I'm going to pick up these books because I want to know about the individuals in those corps as well. So that you're not just getting, you know, people like myself who are already reading the Green Lantern books, but you're really getting those new readers in as well.
Yeah, it suffers from the same problem as the Batman one. There's too many different ones, and it's confusing to the first-time reader.
Yeah.
Especially that bit with Fatality. It's like, they'll soon learn why I used to be called Fatality. It's like, you've never existed before this moment. Why did you have a different identity before then? Why are you now a Star Sapphire?
Oh, and really, please, zip your top up just a little bit. That's all I'm saying. I don't need to see I get enough of that from Catwoman as it is.